Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug Matthews,
man,
he's on the road with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. A lot of college football discussion coming up this hour. You can join us, take it anywhere you like to go across the SEC and college football. 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045. Coach, how are you?
I am doing great.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you all.
Good to see
you. It's been a good start to the new year, at least from my standpoint.
Yes, absolutely. Any big New Year's plans? Did you see the ball drop?
For the first time in 10 years, I did.
I know you go to bed early.
I did. I go to bed very early, but I did.
What prompted you to stay up?
My two granddaughters, two of my granddaughters, and I took a little nap during the day. So
you couldn't fake them into the East Coast ball drop?
Oh, did you hear what Paul did?
No.
He tricked his son into thinking the 11 p.m. ball drop was the actual midnight announcement.
A whole bunch of us.
Oh, it saved you an hour.
Well, that's pretty good. Well, you know what?
Except when we got home from a 40-minute drive and put him to bed, and his clock said 12:22, he had some questions.
Yeah. Well, hey, I would hope he would have questions. You'd be a little concerned. How does this work, Dad?
That's the one thing we didn't foresee in the grand plan.
Doug, do you have any update for us on the Tennessee offensive coordinator?
No, I think probably I ought to probably stay away from that a little bit. As I've said many months ago, or seems like now,
I
got no idea who it's going to be. I did believe and strongly believe that they had the guy picked out they were going to do and had a deal worked out with him. And when I say a deal, not all the I's dotted and T's crossed.
Right.
That's still may be true. I don't know. But
you think they may have lost him?
No. It's one of two things. Again, I was, how do I word this correctly? Obviously, I don't think many people would think I'd come on and say something I didn't have a pretty good idea
That's
about.
Right.
I don't know if they lost him. I don't know if they found somebody else. I don't know if they're still looking internally. I don't think they're looking internally at a coordinator, but as I mentioned, I think on last Wednesday's
show.
You did.
You mentioned Winkie.
I believe that again, I know they didn't bring Winkie in there to be a running back coach. He is the running back coach. Now, will that happen now? Will it not? I don't know. I will say this, though, and I don't think the head coach up there is concerned about this hire right now. I'm not concerned. I'm talking about it. I think he thinks that he will get a very good coordinator. It's going to be somebody that he wants to run what he wants to run. I think there's a lot of some misconception out there about what he is looking for. He is not going to hire, unless I am 1,000% wrong, knowing him and his personality and also what his dealings are. He's going to hire somebody that's going to come in and run what he wants to run. Now, they'll be able to call the plays. But it's not going to be some guy that's going to come in and run a high-powered, let's pedal to the metal, throw the ball over the field. Keep in mind that he is a defensive coach, and he will build this team around a defensive football team, and he knows what offenses he likes to see and what ones he do not like to see. He knows what wins in this league. May not be what some people want to hear, but it's not going to be some highfalutin guy that's going to go out there and throw the ball. It's not going to be an air raid type guy, believe me. I think in the long run, he'll whatever decisions he makes, the National Coaching Convention, that I think this week or starts about this time, maybe it's I don't know the exact dates, but that's when everybody kind of gets together on that. He may have some other coaches leave. I don't think he's going to have any defensive coaches leave, but he might have an offensive coach leave. I don't know. Don't know that there is, but that's when those things are kind of done. So who he's going to hire, I don't know. I didn't know a month ago either, and I haven't asked, and I'm not going to ask. I talked to the athletic director today about a couple of other things, but not about that.
Get back on the phone.
He ain't gonna tell me anything anyway. But
well, and first time head coach. And you mentioned that he doesn't appear to be in a big hurry. Obviously, with this hire, he mentioned the press conference that hey, there's a lot of guys scoring a lot of points in college football. He was more concerned with recruiting. Not that recruiting has taken a back seat or anything like that. They still have a February signing period. If you're looking at lessons for a first-time head coach, is this a mistake by Jeremy Pruitt to not place a bigger value on hiring an offensive coordinator?
Well, I don't think we won't know that until somewhere down the road. Again, I'm going to point out, I know this is apples to oranges, and it's not even close comparison, but the point of that being, and certainly Nick Saban has other things on his mind. Nick Saban hadn't named an offensive coordinator either. Now, everybody thinks it's going to be Dan Enos, but, you know, and I think what Coach Pruitt, I think it's been some things he says he is going to get misunderstood or taken the wrong way. We all know about that, but sometimes you say things, you don't quite say them the way you mean to say them. But what he has basically said is, listen, I don't think he's concerned about getting a really good quality offensive coordinator. But again, he's saying that because it's going to be somebody that's going to do what he wants to do.
He's not panicking, is what you mean.
No, and again, it could be they're going to do what he wants to do. I'm going to reemphasize this. It's not like pro football where they literally hire guys. You know, there are positions. There are several teams in this league whose offense and defense coordinators in the NFL. They don't answer to the head football coach. You know, the Philadelphia Eagles is one of them. Jimmy Swartz does not answer to the head football coach. He was hired by the president and the general manager. He answers to the general manager. That head football coach can't tell him nothing.
He runs the defense.
Head coach defense.
That's exactly right. He has an independent contract. Now, I don't know how that works. It doesn't work. It doesn't happen in college. So, you know, it's not like you hire a guy and he's over here in his office with his staff. That's not the way it works in college. No. You know, those coordinators meet with that head football coach. They're doing what he wants to do. Now, there's different ways of calling plays, formations, and things mm-hmm. like that. And but so that it's going to what whoever's going to be, it's going to be somebody like that. He may make a change or two in his offense, moving some people around. And again, that's going to be on who he hires. But I didn't know if it'd be hired. I thought there's a good opportunity he would not be hired originally by signing date, but obviously it's gone beyond that. So I don't know. I really don't know.
What do you think about?
I couldn't tell you. I'm assuming he's going to have somebody before spring practice. maybe that'd be the best way to put it.
Well, and I'm not asking you these names to tell us if it's going to be the guy or not, but I just want to ask you your opinion on a couple of these coaches. One is Steve Sarkisian. Getting another former head coach possibly on staff, what he's done with the Falcons, he's been let go by them, what he did in college football, is that a guy who would make sense fundamentally with what Jeremy Pruitt wants to do?
Here's why I would say if that is a possibility. Number one, he is the one guy that's been mentioned a lot that he has actually worked with. You know, they were on the staff together at Alabama. Now, Sarkisian was an analyst, but you can bet that they had a lot of interaction, defense coordinator, offensive analyst, on how to stop some things and do things. Yes, that would make sense from a lot of different areas. But I don't know how much of this plays into this or how much it doesn't. Steve Sarkisian is not going to come to Tennessee wanting to be a longtime Tennessee guy. Now, that may be okay. You know, again, that's all in the way Coach Pruitt looks at it. Here's what I don't know, and I don't know that anybody knows this except the head football coach and the athletic director. If they believe that this is a rebuilding period at Tennessee, we know it is a rebuilding period. I know we're going to talk a little bit mm-hmm. today. Just look at the teams in this conference now and what they did in bowl games. Not the results, but looking at them, the talent level and all those things, it's very clear Tennessee is significantly behind. So do you want to bring in a one-year guy that really, whether this offensive coordinator is great or pretty good, is probably not going to make a difference, because he has who he has to work with. This is not a really talented offensive group right now. Doesn't mean they won't be better coached. Doesn't mean they won't be better. But so does he want to do that? Only he can answer that question. And I don't know what direction it is. I will say this. If Sarkisian would make some sense from the standpoint that he was tied up in the NFL up until Sunday, right? That would make some sense. But I certainly don't know that. I think there was some interest. I don't think it was as much as some people make of the guy out at Oklahoma State.
Yorsuch.
Yeah. Was there some interest there? Yeah. How much? I don't know. I don't think there was a big push there, but I don't know that.
Doug, what would be on Philip Fulmer's to-do list if you were selecting a checklist of things for him to sort out moving forward into the second full year as the athletic director after they make this offensive coordinator hire?
Well, let's kind of look. It doesn't look like, now I don't know the entire athletic department as far as head coaches, but it doesn't look like there's going to be any hires there. Maybe I'm missing one somewhere, but certainly the major sports doesn't look like there's going to be higher there. I think there's two things that are really on his plate right now, big things. Number one, if you heard the interview, I replayed it twice. One thing that he and the reason I wanted to ask him about this and get it out there was I'd talked to him about this. When he took over the athletic director's position, he wasn't exactly sure about the people that worked there. And he could not have been more effusive about his praise about what he found there. He really likes the people that are working there. And I'm not talking about coaches. I'm talking about the assistant athletic directors and the people in those positions. And I think he's let them in many areas kind of ride with some things. You know, his big concern is probably not, and I don't mean this in any type of derogatory way, but he's probably not worried a whole lot about the crew team, or not the crew team. He's got people that can handle that. So I think two things. Number one, certainly he is really looking strongly at what to do with Neyland Stadium. There's going to be some major renovations there for a lot of reasons. One of the things that he said that I think it went over my head until I re-listened to it again was he was talking about the fans that sat in the south end zone. That was the original, the first end zone built back in the 30s or 40s. And talking about how those people are people who have had tickets there. Their family's been in their tickets for 60, 80 years. And I said, we have to do something down there to make the experience better for them. My guess is, you know, they got the vision screen on one end. They don't have it on the other. So if you're in that south end zone, you got to turn around and look at it. I'm just speculating. And then the other thing is he's trying to figure out now exactly what the technology coming in and doing technology to make it a better technology friendly place. Texas A&M did this a couple of years ago, and they spent between $30 and $35 million just to renovate a stadium to have that happen. Okay, you're playing at the most 8 football games a year, and his thing is, as he mentioned, you know, he said, I've heard on our renovation between $125 million and $375 million. I want to figure out exactly what we're going to do. That's one thing, and then I think the other thing that he will continue to stress is how do I make the college experience better for all 400 how many athletes they got? And those are the two, I think, key things that he wants to happen. Because as he said on the interview, if you take care of your former players, if you take care of your current players, that spills over and helps everybody when they leave. And he's done a tremendous job of bringing back teams, not just football. Former players, he wants them back in that university. They spend a lot of time getting them back. You tell me about it. They had a 79 swimming championship team. There's something like 300 former swimmers, men swimmers, came back to the campus for that. So that's really, really big for him. I think when he leaves there, I believe he wants it to be where the former players are really impactful and really involved in that program again. And that's big to him.
You look at profitable sports at Tennessee, and this is pretty much for every program out there. It's football and it's men's basketball. How nice is it for an athletic director to step into a situation where your men's basketball team may be in the midst of the greatest season they've ever had? You've got a guy like Rick Barnes leading the program, and they have 5 of their 10 home games remaining sold out. When you're going about the job of rebuilding that football program, which is a big job, how nice do you think it is for Philip Fulmer or any AD to step into a situation like that where during the winter you don't really have to worry about that much with that program?
Well, he's fortunate in that, and as he said many times, you know, he had to come in and hire a football coach. That was it. I think he had maybe a volleyball coach that was open last year too. The track situation's working its way through on that. Looks in much better position. But without question, you know, they had, of course, I get a lot of my info from Billy Justice, but, you know, they had, they're having 21-5, 21-8 every single game. And I can tell you this, because I called for a guy to buy tickets to the Georgia game next Saturday. Ain't none. You know,
you're sold out.
They'll get you in there.
Out on the street corner. Well, I, you know, I it wasn't for me, but I'd have made a different phone call if that's from me.
Honest.
That's one question you would ask.
That's exactly right.
They had 21,000 plus for Tennessee Tech this past Saturday in the middle of the holiday season. That's where that program is right now. And the women's program is top 10.
You know, one of the things about Bill talks about, and I don't know how many people listen to Bill on the show, a lot do, but mm-hmm. the thing Bill, you know, Bill said, and he's right. He said, you know, and it's true, I've been there. At basketball games, when you're good and playing good team, they're fun to go see. You don't have to sit around a tailgate for 2 hours. You know, you don't have to worry about replays. They're fun to go watch, and it's fun playing. You know, Bill's known it for 50 years, you know, the Ernie and Bernie days. It was fun to go watch games. He said it was fun when Bruce Pearl was there. He said it's fun to go to a game, watch a game in an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and leave and have a great time. And they're making it fun again, no doubt about it.
I was just thinking about that because of all the time and energy Philip Fulmer has to put into that football program right now, trying to make it right.
Yeah.
Think about if they were in the midst of year 4 or 5 under a coach and they're struggling and they're looking like a team that's not going to be in the NCAA tournament, that you're having to also, in the back of your mind, you're making that list of prospective basketball hires you're going to have to make after the season.
Doug Dickey said it best, though. He said, told me this one time, I was in a group, we were talking to him, he said, when the football program is going well here and we're winning, nothing else matters. He said, and when the football program is not doing well here, nothing else matters. In other words, that's what drives the ship. It's nice to have all these other things, but it's what drives the ship in so many, many ways, but especially in this conference. You know, this conference is a football-driven league, and that's what's on his plate right now.
Doug, do you think the losses to Vanderbilt and Missouri will carry more weight with Pruitt than the wins over Auburn and Kentucky?
No, I think this is what Pruitt looks at. And when he came here, and I know this was part of the interview process, and he would have crawled up here to take this job, as most assistants would. But the reason he was hired by this head football coach was about threefold. I've talked about those in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them was he knew, and Philip knew, this is going to be a rebuilding. He didn't know how much of a rebuilding, because a lot of your rebuilding has to do with who you're playing. You know, if you're playing LSU and A&M and Auburn and Georgia and those, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer. No, I think he came in with I watched him the first day he coached up there in spring practice. They're coaching exactly the same way. He knows what he has to get in place from a defensive standpoint. In his viewpoint, you can like it or not like it. If we don't get where we can play outstanding defense, it really don't make any difference, because I'm not going to be here that long. And if we don't get where we can run the football on offense, not that we have to do more, we're not going to be here that long, because he understands. But I think he is looking at two programs. He is looking at Georgia, and he's looking at Alabama, and probably the third program, which he knows is going to get better, is Florida. Mm-hmm. Those are the three programs, Georgia and Alabama right now. You know, yes, Tennessee got to get where they can beat Vanderbilt and Kentucky and South Carolina. But the fact of the matter is, if they get where they can beat those teams and he can't beat Georgia and Florida and Alabama, it doesn't make any difference, because those are the teams you got to beat at Tennessee. And he knew that when he was hired. The the former head coach knows that. The athletic director, the same guy, knows that. That's what you're hired there to get this program back to competitiveness. And it is not competitive with any of those teams right now.
You know, we were talking during the break, Coach, about the quarterbacks committed to Tennessee. There's not a dual threat guy there. You look around college football, a lot of these teams that put up a lot of points, they have quarterbacks who can run the ball. But we're also looking at a national championship game with two pocket quarterbacks, and Tua Tagovailoa and Trevor Lawrence for Clemson. What does that say about where college football always has been or is today? Or does it say anything at all? And what does that say about what Jeremy Pruitt wants to do on offense?
Well, I think, and that is a good indicator of the offensive coordinator. You know, when you look at what type of guys he going to bring in here, just look at who Jeremy Pruitt. Now, he didn't recruit Garantano, but he did Shrout and he did the Maurer kid. Those guys are pocket. They're Fromm type guys, you know. And it's kind of interesting. You look at Georgia, and again, I'm comparing those two because there's a lot of similarity between Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt. A lot of similarities, you know, their background and the way they do things, and you know, Georgia last year brings in this Fields kid, the number one player in the country. He's transferring out of there. Why? Because that's not what they're going to be. If they were, he would have been in there, you know. So the way things are going right now that I see Jeremy Pruitt doing, he's going to have a pocket type quarterback. Doesn't mean they can't run. They're not just standing back there, but they're not option type guys. So he's going to bring in somebody that's going to build that type of offense because, again, that's the type of offense that he wants. It wasn't there last year for a lot of different reasons. May not be as there as much this year. He's got definitely don't have near enough, don't have any speed at wide receiver. It has to be corrected and got to get a heck of a lot better in the offensive line. Everybody else are pretty good.
Doug Lincoln Riley staying at Oklahoma. Many thought he would have a chance at an NFL job, namely the Cleveland Browns, but he takes the extension at Oklahoma. He's going to stay in college football, and some coaches are just meant to be in that stage and in that environment, because if you're willing to recruit every day, hours every day, then that's the life for you. And if he enjoys it, that's where you should be.
That's one of the things I'm going to really be talking about Saturday, exactly what you said, John. I'm going to give you two different examples. Now, this isn't meant to be, it's just an example of the recruiting part of it. If you are not, as a head football coach, a relentless recruiter, and that means that during football season, you're not spending at least 2 hours a night talking to prospects, then you are not going to be successful in college football anymore. I'm going to give you two good examples. Mark Richt, there's no doubt in my mind that's why Mark Richt got out of college football. That's not him. That's not a knock on him, but that he is not going to do that. Didn't do it at Georgia, didn't do it at Miami, and got ahead of the posse on that thing. And if Lincoln Riley is one of those guys, here's what's happening out in that part of the country now. You now have three teams. When I was growing up, Dave McGinnis and I were talking about this. We grew up same time. There were four teams in the Midwest. You had Nebraska, you had Oklahoma, you had Texas A&M, you had Texas. That was it. Year in and year out, and you could count on two or three of those teams being big time football teams. Well, we know what happened with the Big Ten taking Nebraska. Their program's gone down. A&M has come to the Southeastern Conference. Texas has been down, and Oklahoma's had a pretty good run there for the last 5-6 years. But after the ball game, I text the athletic director at Tennessee and said, I don't know if you're planning on scheduling Texas in the future, but maybe you ought to revisit. Texas, they're not 100% back, but you got between Texas A&M now and Jimbo Fisher at Texas and Oklahoma, you know, Herman, you got three guys that are recruiting guys that have all the tradition in the world. That area has changed now.
And you didn't even mention a program in Oklahoma State that's winning 9 or 10 games a year.
But Oklahoma State, one of the reasons they won 9 or 10, they're like some teams in this league. When Oklahoma's running, when Texas is up running, when A&M's up running, they take all the players. I mean, there will be a few slip through the cracks.
No, Dana Holgerson's down at Houston now.
But those are the programs.
Yeah,
those are the programs right now. So that's what's changed out there, and I think you're going to continue to see those teams get better and better and better. Here's the thing about that Oklahoma, about Lincoln Riley. The question is, and it's because he's young, does he have – he's been very fortunate. Not many guys their first 2 years have two Heisman Trophy quarterbacks that transferred in, by the way. He ain't going to have that in the future, and Texas is going to be better. We'll see what happens out there, but I think he's probably a college guy and wanted to stay there. He'll have opportunities down the road without question.
Dana Holgerson may be an odd guy or whatever, and I understand their financial implications and everything, but what West Virginia is way better job than Houston, so what's at play here?
That is the question, Paul, that you automatically comes to your mind. Why would a guy who is at a power five school,
pretty
West Virginia
program,
why would he go to Houston? And if Hogerson is a difficult guy to work with. And he is a difficult guy to have working for you.
And he's a difficult guy to figure out what he's doing with his hair.
And so I think it was that. I think both, from what I've been told, I think both were glad. West Virginia was glad to see him leave, and he was glad to leave.
And
West
Houston
Virginia.
Says, "Hey, we'll take difficult because he's."
Yep. Did you read the quote by the president of Houston, though, a couple of years ago that they reposted? He said, "If 8-4 will get you fired here, if you're not winning 10-2, we're going to get rid of you." Well, that's pretty high bar to win 10 ball games. That's the president, the guy that signs your check. So
good luck to everybody involved.
Chad, Mark Richt steps down. He retires, and he does it late in the process here where Manny Diaz takes the job at Temple. And then after establishing an early signing period on short notice, bounces and goes back to Miami. It made for a weird dynamic there.
Yeah. How odd is that, Coach, that – I look at that and I think if there was, and I don't know Mark Richt, but what we've heard about Mark Richt, if there was any inclination that he was going to retire, it seems like he would have given his staff a heads up. And Manny Diaz, if he thought he was going to get the Miami job, would not have left Temple and put Temple in that position and then put Miami in that position. So is this a case of something went terribly wrong after they got blown out by Wisconsin in the Pinstripe Bowl, or was this just Mark Richt knew he may be getting out and didn't tell anyone?
Well, I think it's 2-2. 2+2 tells you pretty much about that. If Manny Diaz, if he knew there was going to be an opening there, he had to know that he was probably going to be the choice.
Yeah.
If he left, I think it was something Mark Richt decided to do. And I think he, you know, they went, what, did they go 7-6 this year? Is that right?
I think that's right, but it was a very underachieving year based on expectations.
After two pretty good years. Top 10 preseason.
Seeing the direction that everything's going in. I think there's probably more of that. Now, it would be, you know, you never know until you're in a position what you would do. But most of the coaches I know, assistant coaches, it would be awfully hard to take a job and then turn right around and leave.
Yes.
Now, there was a buyout in there. I think it's $12 million. Somebody's paying $12 million to Temple.
Wow.
But it's, you know, you can't be critical of it. I mean, that's easy to do, but boy, that would be difficult to do. But he is back down there, and I think he'll probably be a pretty good choice. You know, he was a hotshot young a coach over here in Middle Tennessee. What, about 12, 15 years ago or so now?
About maybe not 13 that many years ago. Yeah,
and he's done. He is a very well thought of defensive coordinator,
and he has a ton of ties to South Florida.
Yep,
he does. When you were coaching at Louisville, would you consider Temple today to be a similar program to Louisville when you were there? And I ask this for this reason. I think the negotiated buyout that they got from both Jeff Collins leaving for Georgia Tech and Manny Diaz leaving after 2 weeks was something around $7 million. Is that almost a better spot for Temple to be in, to get a $7 million check and know that you just had a coach for 2 weeks and get to go hire a new one?
No,
to
I
have
don't think
money
so.
To work with?
$7 million is really a drop in the bucket in college football now. But Temple is this is almost true of any place. Northwestern, city schools, by and large, are tough head jobs for a couple of reasons. Number one, in most of them, you got a pro football team there. You know, that's one of the things that Vanderbilt faces here. Yep. You got the Titans. In Philadelphia, you know, you got the pro team. You know, Chicago, you got the pro team. Those are tough places that most city schools that are in areas where pro football teams, they're the second program by far. So Temple, I think, they've tried to make it a good quality job, but it's a stepping stone job for sure.
Pat Fitzgerald says he's not talking to the Packers, but there are reports out there that the Packers aren't going to take no for an answer like that. And the Packers boss hired Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. What kind of pro coach do you think he'd make?
I think he's an excellent football. I think he'd be a good coach anywhere. But here's the thing about Fitzgerald. I don't know him, but I know people know him very well. He is 100% Northwestern.
He said,
I played there. He loves it. I think he's got a job. He can probably stay as long as he wants.
I love the idea that he could stay for as long as he wants. Then I think, what if he wins, you know, 3 games a year for 3 years?
He'll get fired.
Well, and I think it's the Green Bay Packers we're talking about also.
Yeah.
But I can understand him wanting to say that. You know, some people, some coaches want to be college coaches. They love the fact that, there's a couple of things that keep you in college and a couple of things that make you leave college and go to pros, or leave pros and go to college. In pros, unless you are highly, highly talented, you don't have a say over who your players are. In other words, I'm coaching players. As Bill Parcells says, somebody else is buying the groceries and I'm doing the cooking, you know. And in college, it's the other way around. But, of course, in college, you have to continually be restocking those players. So it's really on what you like. And one other thing on that, here's the big difference. It used to be that pro coaches, assistant coaches, made a lot more money than college coaches. That's not true anymore. Those salaries are almost, you look exactly the same. Heck, Saban makes more as a head coach than two or three
NFL coaches.
So it's just whichever one you like the most. But from everything I've heard about Pat Fitzgerald and listen to him talk, I mean, you can hear it in his voice when he talks about Northwestern. He loves that school, and I think he loves that city.
Doug, give us the teams that caught your attention throughout the bowl games that we've seen.
Watch more bowl games this year than I ever have, and try to watch more, not who's winning or losing, but just where talent level is, you know, and where the players are. First off, let me say this. UCF, I really am impressed with their talent. Now, what's going to get them... It's the offense and defensive lines, as it normally is, but I was really impressed with them. LSU, clearly a better team. I think in that at one point the game wasn't over, there had been 22 penalties called, I think 11 against each team. LSU should have won that game relatively handily, I thought, but you got to give UCF credit for that. LSU, very impressive. Got talent, and they're going to have talent. What'd they lose? They lost six defensive backs, I think, in the last half of the season. Got two kicked out in the ball game, and still have guys in there playing well. So LSU, love where they're going. I think the question there is, quite frankly, is Orgeron the type of coach that can get them game day wins against really good teams? And he's, you know, he... Just watching him on the sideline, I got a bad opinion of him anyway, so I'm prejudiced. But you just wonder, you know, he looks to me like he spends most of his time cussing and the rest of it spitting.
Maybe doing both at the same time.
I mentioned Texas. How impressed is Texas? You know, remember last week one thing I talked about? I was talking about more in Oklahoma's case. That game in Texas, you could just see – again, you got a traditional program, multi-national championships, toughness. Tom Herman had that team believing, I don't know if we're going to win or lose, guys. He probably said we're going to win. But we're going to go out there and we're going to knock their fannies off. And that is what they did. They physically got after Georgia. A&M was extremely impressive to me. I thought Florida. I know Michigan's had a lot of off the field and other things, but Florida looked better than I thought they'd look. Auburn, of course, was the other one on that. And Auburn looked awfully impressive too. So, but I'd say Texas and Texas A&M and Florida are the three that really caught my eye across the country. You know, you look around, where are the teams out west? You know who controls the West Coast now? Washington State are the two.
And we
best
saw
teams.
What happened there.
What's happened out there? You know,
and that's because of a superior excited. Coach and Chris Peterson.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, what's happened in that part of the country? We already talked about the Midwest. You know, it looks like Texas is very close to being back. A&M, you know, and Oklahoma. But as you just look around the teams that are built to win and built to win big ball games, there's not that many out there. And we're seeing some Southeastern Conference teams that are trying to fight to get back up there. Tennessee being one of them. Tennessee's is a significantly ways away, I think, from those top teams right now, talent-wise.
Doug, as you assess Alabama versus Clemson for the national championship, what type of game will this be, and what does this game come down to?
I think it's going to come down to the last series. I put one caveat in there that's assuming that neither team just implodes. You know, if they lay the ball, look at what happened to Georgia. Now, listen, Texas had a lot to do with it, but you know, you can't have a punter. When I think the last time I saw a punter go down on one knee, you work on that all the time. You know, it's like a shortstop. You don't go down on one knee. And I think the last time I saw that was a high school game about 15 years ago. When's the last time you saw a punter go down on one knee and get down?
That's crazy.
I mean, you have one of the top running backs in the country that's laying the ball on the ground, you know. So if that happens, then you can have an upset or have even a blowout. But I think that these two teams know each other very well. They know all the players. They played each other. I think they're very similar. To me, you got to give Alabama the edge in two areas. I think Alabama defensively is better than Clemson at stopping the run. And Clemson with the Lawrence kid out, that guy's the best pass rusher in college football. He's out. And I think the quarterback situation, I still think Tua in the quarterback situation gives them an advantage there. But you look at them, you know, they match up so well. Receivers are about the same type of players, a little bit different size in them. Two of them, by the way, from Knoxville, Tennessee, that start for Clemson. That ought to make you feel real good if you're, both of them could have swam to
how about the quarterback, Jeff?
Tennessee.
Yeah, a guy who was committed to Tennessee.
But
Trevor Lawrence.
But having said that, they're the two best programs in the country the last 5 years.
Yep.
And there's no doubt about it. I mean, they're the two best. And you would have to anticipate that it being a very close ball game.
Watching Alabama, can Clemson take away the middle of the field in the passing game? Because that's where they just ran up and down the field. And they've been doing that all year. But if Clemson could take away that aspect of their offense, this would be a tight ball game.
Yeah, well, the only chance that Oklahoma had was what? Quarterback. Running quarterback. And with all the passes, it still got down to a running quarterback. Clemson does not have that. Mm. I haven't seen any teams that have beaten Alabama in the last 10 years that did have a mobile running quarterback, whether it be Deshaun Watson or somebody like that now. So I think Alabama's the better football team. If Alabama plays well, I think they'll win it by a touchdown probably in the fourth quarter.
If you ever doubted the power of Jimmy Sexton and just how good of an agent he is, look no further than Butch Jones getting national media attention to be the next head coach at West Virginia.
Oh.
That's where you know that your agent is doing a great job getting the word out there to different media members, pumping his guy to a certain school.
I saw him on the sidelines at the semi. He looked like kind of like a water boy.
Yeah. What do you think about that job, West Virginia, now that it's open? How good of a job is that? And
I don't think it's a real good Power 5 job from this reason. It's much what we said about Nebraska, and Nebraska is a powerhouse job. They're in the Big Ten. You're at West Virginia, and you're playing in the Big 12.
You're traveling a long way,
and that's
play
a
games.
Tough place to recruit. They've been good there over the years. Dillon had some good teams there, but West Virginia is not a top job. I think it's a better job than Houston, but it's not a top job. It's really not in that league and not in that area.
Doug, what's coming up this weekend?
Going to have, I think, a really good show tomorrow. Going to break down the take a good look
Saturday.
Saturday, that is day. Yeah,
you're right. Thursday.
Yeah. Saturday, excuse me. Going to take a real good look at Clemson and Alabama, maybe from a little bit of different perspective on that. Talk about that. We'll get into with Tony about some of the other what teams are doing. You know, not going to be any changes in the conference this year. Head football coach, that's unusual in the Southeastern Conference and kind of where teams are. We've had a lot of coordinator changes, so that. And then, of course, Bill Justice will start tomorrow a little more, bit more basketball. And Sunday, a good long talk. And looking at this recruiting class, one thing I did want to touch on real quickly when I was talking about the quarterbacks that Coach Pruitt is recruiting. And you can take a look at the offense you're going to be looking at. He recruited for the first time in I don't know how many years, Tennessee recruited two big physical tight ends, 6'5", 235-pound guys in high school that are going to be 250, 260. That also tells you the direction that he's heading in. He's not bringing these guys in to be defensive linemen. They're going to be big, and they're going to have tight ends, all these offensive lines. So, again, it gives you, I think, a good example of where this team is going to where he is trying to take this team from an offensive perspective. As you look at who he is going to hire, what type of coach he's going to hire on offense, it's going to be a run based offense that is big and physical.
Doug, I failed to bring this up earlier. I'll ask you on the way out. Urban Meyer is 54 years old. He claims he's done. Do you buy that?
You know what? I kind of do. Somebody, I forget, Paul may know who it was, some national writer I thought had a very interesting, is on either on the ESPN website or CBS, about Al. You know, the celebration of Meyer leaving somehow was hollow. And it was to me. Here's a guy that is in his generation, if right there was Saban, you know, you, those are the two guys. But it was almost like, you know, in his Rose Bowl final game, first time he's ever been there. But the off the field stuff that happened this year, mm-hmm. and if you go back and look at some of what happened down in Florida,
sure,
I think that was the way, it did make it seem kind of hollow. And I don't know. And you know, I noticed his wife. Did you read the comment his wife said? He said, I want Urban to be done with college football. I think he's 54.
He is.
Is that right?
54 years old.
You can never say never, but you know. And the other part of it is after you've had jobs like that. After you've had his dream job's Ohio State. You know, he grew up in that state. He Florida took them, you know, to a couple of national championships. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not through. I'll say this.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was coaching Michigan next year.
Well, Notre Dame may come open if Brian Kelly gets one of his NFL jobs.
Yeah.
That would surprise me. Columbia, maybe. Columbia, yeah, maybe. We'll take- By the way, I agree. I heard your comment the other day on the team back in the
Penn.
You're right. If they didn't play Columbia, how could you count that as a success?
And I couldn't find Columbia's records for that year. Wikipedia's got some filling in to do.
Just think about
how convenient
this.
They took that year off, the year that Penn went 15-0.
Yeah, no kidding.
Next year, the 150th year of college football. 150 years of playing college. Think about that. 1869.
Doug was there for all of them.
Started. You know what? I my senior year was 1969. I was there for the. I still have a helmet that's got the little 100 on it and a football. So
you still have that?
No, I got a picture of it.
Oh,
they was back then. Well, if you took a helmet back then, they charged you.
But it had the 100 on it.
I know it.
So they just in year 101 they just kept
were stickers. They just took stickers.
Sorry, I thought they were.
They weren't real.
On
there, so. This was 50 years ago. John, they didn't. They took those. They changed those. They
reused
tore
those.
It right off.
Much like my high school.
That's exactly right. You didn't take your helmet with you when you left.
Paul, yeah. I can't find info on the 1897 Columbia football team, but I can tell you in 1899 they went 9-3.
Paul, your thoughts?
Roar Lions roar.
Doug Matthews has been our guest. You can catch him on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. We could have pulled the office prank, Chad, with Doug, where he said tomorrow, and we just act like today's Friday. Like Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, see if he'd come in tomorrow.
See if he comes in tomorrow for... Yeah.
These holidays throw us all
off. What are you doing tomorrow on the show, Doug?
That's pretty good. You've got me on that one. I got to admit that. You've got me on
you
that
You can
one.
Catch Doug this weekend, Saturday morning, 9 to 11 with Forklift Systems Football. Saturday, of course, Big Orange Sunday morning, 8 a.m. Doug, thank you.
You bet. See you all next week.